Good morning, comrade. And today in the studio, we have Scott and Jeff, and we also have Sam, my cat. So
Sam the cat, he's sitting very nicely on the other side of the couch where I'm at, but he could start attacking me any second.
Yeah, he's a vicious little fella, little orange tabby cat. He's a
brutal monster.
He's intense. Anyway, what's going on, man? It's been one of those weeks where, like, you don't even know, like, where to start with stuff because it's just been such a wild one, don't
man,
you think?
Man, I've been working.
You've been working? You don't see nothing?
I mean, I see stuff, but, I mean, we're just doing intros right now, so, you know, I've been working.
Right.
Working, Mardi Gras season.
Yeah, as a recording, Coup de Vue was last night.
I did not attend, but I went to Boheme. Which is the Friday before Coup de Vue. I hear Coup de Vue is nice, but I've just never been.
No, yeah. Yeah. I haven't been going to that many parades the past, like, 10 years or so.
I mean, I pick and choose mine, but, you know, I usually make it to a few.
Yeah, every now and then. But
especially now that I work in the French Quarter during it. So
yeah, you can't avoid them.
Yeah, I expect I will see my fair share before this carnival season is up.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, man, what's been going on?
You just asked me. I worked.
Yeah.
What's going on with you?
So my school's closing. That's happening.
Is that good?
No, it's actually very bad.
I mean, I watched Nickelodeon as a kid, and school sucks. So, isn't school's closing?
I don't know show what you were watching, man, but schools are good. Also, I'm not a kid that goes to school. I'm a teacher that teaches at school. I'm ethically obligated to be concerned about the well-being of children. So, that's the real roadblock here for that kind of thinking.
I didn't mean to grind my skateboard all of your ethics.
Yeah, no. It's time for me to be, like, you know, the concerned person here. But I guess we can get right into it. Jefferson Parish just wants to close my school and three others and start merging them into these sort of, like, K-8 schools. It's wild.
That's bad. Weren't, like, only private schools doing K-8 back in the day?
It is a private school thing, I think, but it's now becoming more and more like a charter school thing.
Yeah.
Which is basically private schools anyway, just publicly. They receive funds and they're technically considered to be, like, under a legalistic, very, like, you know, borderline sense.
I mean,
public school, but
growing up around here, I've learned moving around a bit that it is not the norm. Like,
what's not the norm?
Here in Louisiana, the norm is kindergarten through fifth grade is
most of the
elementary
school, pre-K or kindergarten. Yeah,
but I hear in other places it's kindergarten through sixth, and
okay,
then they go to junior high. In Louisiana, we have middle schools, which is not a thing they really have. I've seen other places, like in Mississippi, they have junior highs, and in Florida, they have junior high. But then I guess they all just are high schools. It just depends on when they start.
Either way, I mean, like, this is the sort of thing that, again, one of the school board members, he mentioned to me, like, after the school board meeting, he wanted to move to a portfolio model.
Portfolio.
Yeah. It is stupid because it pretty much means in, like, a general sense. It's a lot of, like, it's one of these terms that basically is a code word for charter schools, right?
Yeah.
But, like, it's the one of the definitions, I suppose, is that, like, the schools are competing against one another in, like, their different little sectors, and it's kind of like a Darwinism for schools, right? You have these schools competing with one another, and then the strongest schools get to move on and get replicated, and the weaker schools get closed.
Oh, like what happened to Sears? Why Sears went away?
Sears did that? Sears was competing with Sears?
Oh, well, you don't, there was this, like, I read this big, long article, I forget where I read it, but it was, apparently, like, they had some guy who bought it, or came up to run it, and he was like, good news, instead of working, instead of all the sections working together, we're going to be competing. They just all started backbiting each other, and yeah. Sears isn't a thing.
Yeah, it's almost like one of those, it's almost like the Hunger Games, except for just one store. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like they're just getting their own, like, they're just having the people that, like, it's a really, if you're defining work as competing with all of the other workers, then that's sort of like a good way to divide up the labor and have them fighting one another instead of the boss, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I just wonder how that, like, happened on a micro level. Like, would, like, Home and Garden just run over all the PlayStations with a lawnmower? Like, yeah,
That's wild. But anyway, like, in this sort of model, yeah, the school board just sort of commissions the schools. You know, they're basically like the deal, like the contractor. Or not the contractor, but the contractee. They're signing and managing the contract. It's wild.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah, and that's what they have. In New Orleans, it's called a portfolio model, too. And New Orleans is now 100% charter schools.
Oh, yeah.
They close schools every year. And, I mean, there's a lot of BS.
I used to know somebody who worked at a charter school. They don't do that anymore. They just aren't a teacher.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are like that. And if it's the person you're talking about, it's the person I'm thinking of, they even had a union at their charter schools, which charter schools are designed to not have.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, there's only three schools in Orleans Parish that have unions, and one of them right now is under attack, called Coghill. We can get probably somebody who's closer to that situation on a future show, but yeah, it's one of these things where there's the language of school choice is really bandied about, and school choice is just straight up code for charter schools. Yeah. You know, and I'm sort of like operate under the idea that, you know, if you don't have anything good.
That's always the thing with all privatization. It'd be like, oh, do you want us to, you want the government to run this? Or would you rather have a choice between. Yeah.
Let the free market decide, man.
Between this utilities company or this utilities company. That's never really the case because it's always just going to end up being one utilities company.
Well, even in like Entergy, right? Yeah. Like there's no competing electrical company because they're designed to have a monopoly.
Yeah.
I mean, but with and that's different than with schools, I suppose. But but there's similarity in the sense that like these contracts are not being given in a non-political sense, right? There's this idea that everybody gets a fair shake in this, and that the criteria for judging which schools are successful and which schools are not is just, and it's not the case.
There aren't any like small like very good like. People trying to start a school, they just work as teachers, like it's just
the people that are most equipped to teach are teachers.
Just all these glad handing companies that want to like turn a profit on schools,
or even if like and there are some situations where they're like smallly held charter schools or whatever, but like what does your incentive become once you're managing your own budget and you're not beholden to anyone. And, you know, you're basically an enterprise that's a nonprofit, technically speaking, but you have a budget that you have to operate with. You get resources coming in from the state and you get like funding or whatever from whatever nonprofit, like whatever groups are giving to it.
Nonprofits always profit though.
Yeah. Well, they end up having, generally speaking, high executive salaries. They end up chasing a lot of grants, and that ends up driving what they should be, what they're trying to do.
Well, yeah, they profit plenty, but then they're like, we didn't make any profit.
No, it's technically not a profit at all.
Yeah, because it goes to people's salary. It's cost, like, it's counted as like operating fees.
Right. Or, well, and even in New Orleans, right, they have a series of groups called chartered management organizations.
Yikes.
And they are the people who run the charter schools. And guess what? Charter management organizations can be for profit, but the charter schools themselves can't be.
Yeah,
so it's almost like a shell, you know?
The profit doesn't go to the schools, it goes to the management.
It's almost like you put like a different colored coat of paint on the top, you know?
I mean, it's just kind of the same system with like coal mining. They just have the same company at the top and a bunch of fake companies at the bottom.
Oh yeah. One that was what happened with those folks out in Kentucky. Was it Kentucky? Yeah, I think that's what it was. Where they just closed a bunch of.
They tried stopping another train, but
you know what? When a train's coming pretty fast, you kind of have to get out of the way.
No, like one of the ones, like the one, remember the one that the workers just like tried to stop the train from leaving with the coal? They tried doing
They blocked them in for like several weeks.
They tried doing that again too.
And?
I didn't hear anything else about it.
Yeah. Well, solidarity with the folks out there doing that, because that's not cool, you know.
Did the people from the first one get paid?
They ended up getting something. I don't remember exactly what the situation was, but they ended up walking away not empty-handed.
Better than if they hadn't.
Right, exactly. And you know, that to bring that around to my situation with my school closing, I've been talking a lot with my coworkers, and there's a lot of... There is both enthusiasm with, you know, showing up to the next school board meeting, emailing, phoning, or regular mailing, or whatever, just messaging these school board members who are coming out and they're saying they're closing their school. There's enthusiasm behind it, but there's also some skepticism. And, you know, the sort of prevailing... Not exclusively prevailing, but like one of the strongest sort of tendencies when people are, you know, thinking about this or talking about this that I found is that there's a certain sense of this is inevitably going to happen, and that there's nothing that we can do about it. And that's where I sort of I can't agree with that. Right? It's like a extremely hopeless approach, I find.
Well, yeah, once you say that, they're like, that's when they've already won. Like,
or if you're justifying that, well, it's going to be fine, I guess. You know, whatever, it's going to change, but...
You're already cutting your losses.
Yeah, and look, I'm not... Like, the folks that think this are thinking it for a very good reason, and, you know, they're people I, you know, work with and respect and talk to every day. But I can't think like that, because if it's that sort of like a hopeless, inevitable, like a powerlessness, then I would just, I can't sit like that. I can't feel powerless, you know?
Yeah.
Even when you are. And I think on the other end, in terms of the action end, like even if you can, you put everything you can and you organize, you know, every person in the community and every school board member and every like person in the community, every teacher, every, you know, community member, everybody who's interested in this to get out there, and you give it your best shot and you still don't win, at least you're going to get something that's more than if you sort of like roll over and take it.
Yeah. You won't let them get it for free at least.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like again, make them work for it.
They're just trying to get all of this stuff for free. Like, well, nobody says anything, they just take it.
Well, and the framing of it is really sharp too. Like, it's framed not as like we're closing these four schools, but it's framed as part of like a larger infrastructure and
it's a rollout, it's not like a premiere.
Yeah, no, it's like an infrastructure and efficiency plan or something like that, where they're using, like, they've gone and like drawn up a multiple page document. This has been years in the making, right? They've had like a contractor group out come and talk about like, well, this is how we think your schools are going. You know, and this is basically there to go to sort of like justify to the school board what they already were thinking, right?
Yeah.
That's why they commissioned this group to do it. And then they also framed, like, there was a lot of, you know, researching or whatever, saying that, well, these schools are at this amount of occupancy, and there's, you know, and based on all of this evidence, then our decision is to close these four schools and make them K-8s because of 3 years of data based on a K-8s being good, you know?
Yeah, that's...
You're just changing the entire way that education works based off of 3 years of data and a bunch of BS.
Yeah. But, like, is the school board paying for all these people to come look around, stuff like that?
Yes. This has already cost millions of dollars.
Okay, so they either have to act on it or be like, we lost all this money, which they probably won't do, because then they just a bunch of morons who lost the money.
Well, they are a bunch of morons that they lost their money, but they know what they are actually pushing towards something that they wanted in the first place. They're just doing the work to make it look good, right?
Yeah.
But the point of it all is to move towards charter schools in Jefferson Parish, which Orleans Parish, again, they're finished there. Yeah. Every school in Orleans Parish is a charter. They want to push them out to Jefferson now.
Oh, man.
And why are charter schools bad?
Because they don't care.
Well, they maybe they care, maybe they don't. I mean, that's structurally speaking, the charter schools are able to sort of like gobble up little like sections of territory. They don't technically, they're not technically, you know, associated with the school board other than through this contract. So their own bargaining unit in terms of a union, right?
Yeah.
So most of the charter schools aren't unions because of this legal workaround. So the unions that exist in a school that becomes charter disappears.
They're not going to give those people jobs.
Or they can be a member of the union, but they don't have a contract that's with the charter operator.
Yeah, so they just won't hire them.
No. So like I'm talking about a collective contract, right?
Yeah.
So I'm talking about a collective contract with this charter operator. Basically, if there is a collective bargaining agreement in a situation, right? And it's with the school board.
Yeah, they don't have to honor it.
Yeah, the subcontractor doesn't have to honor it. Exactly.
It's like subletting your apartment.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, really disgusting. And you would, if this wasn't the objective.
I mean, it sounds like it shouldn't be legal.
Well, I mean, it definitely is legal because the legal represent the system supports this stuff. But like, if the intention wasn't to chop off like the cut up labor unions into little tiny pieces, then there would be provisions in these charter school contracts that would say they would have to honor, you know, collective bargaining that currently exists between the union and the school board. But they don't do that, do they?
I mean, how do you get them to respect that?
Basically having it, getting who to respect the charter.
Yeah.
You say you don't get a charter if you don't do this.
Yeah.
But the point is that the school board doesn't do it, so they're fine with it.
Well, the school board doesn't seem to really like the teachers.
No. And again, let me.
It seems like something they're always trying to work around.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. They want to, and I can put an exact moment to this. If you go and you check out this week's Jefferson Parish School Board meeting, they had.
Where would I find something like that?
JPSchools.org. They actually have a section where you can like look at all of the school board meetings. And honestly, I have a version that I'd probably post on my personal YouTube. Yeah. That's going to be sort of clipped out with some of the critical points. I'm just a very terrible video editor. And it takes me a long time to get stuff done.
If we do it, it'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. Or it'll go up on the website later.
Yeah.
Or on some of the social media. Keep an eye out. But anyway, excuse me. One of the things that happened, and it continues to happen, it's happened throughout this process, is when they announced that they were going to put like organize this infrastructure plan,
yeah,
or whatever.
Sounds great.
They had language in there that talked about school closings and things like that. And some of the teachers from some of the middle schools and the elementary schools already knew who was on the chopping block, right?
Yeah.
So we had teachers show up and school workers show up saying, hey, what you're planning on doing, even if what you're saying is true, this would put us in a significantly worse situation because we don't have enough space in our school to make this happen. We, you know, all these other things, right?
Like, they can't fit more kids in a school like that.
Correct. And sort of like on top of that, we would have teachers and school workers and including myself, you know, saying, this is a terrible idea. You didn't even ask us what we're going to do, what you're doing here. You didn't even ask us what we wanted in this sort of situation. You're just doing whatever. You know, I talked to parents, I've talked to whoever. Nobody feels hurt on this. They're just making decisions in our name that affect entire communities, and they don't care. Ooh. that people are upset about it. Well, totally they, frozen out of the process.
What are they gonna, basically they're like, what are you gonna do, move?
Yeah, exactly. Or, well, I mean, again, technically these people are supposed to be, you know, held accountable for this via you know, elections or, yeah, whatever, but they're
not even taking the constituents into like
no
into account.
No, and that was one of the big arguments that that some of the folks out there made. But also since the beginning as well, like there was language for school choice in this whole thing. And when I hear language about school choice, my brain, because everybody's brain goes straight to charter school, because that is the rhetoric that charter school operators and the entire school reform movement rolls out when they say these public schools, these government schools, as Donald Trump said at the State of the Union on Tuesday, or Wednesday rather, these schools don't work, and the charter schools are the ones that do. You know, and there's no evidence to back that up, obviously, but it's total BS.
Well, there's that one Bill Gates documentary.
Yeah, the one that where he lied straight out of his ass, and then, you know, the entire time just promoted an ideological agenda of teachers are terrible and they hate your kids, even though they work with them every single day, through thick and thin, all of it.
I wonder how Bill Gates learned to do computers.
Well, no, Bill Gates, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? The whole thing is just, like, that whole waiting for Superman thing, oh my god. Like, part of that was the, like, rise of Michelle Rhee during that time. You remember her?
Barely. Isn't she, like, drummed out of the whole industry now?
Well, yeah, well, she's on the, private sector side of now, if I'm not mistaken. And she was considered to be Donald Trump's Secretary of Education because she is all about charter schools, testing, and this Teach for America, she's one of the founders of the New Teacher Project. The New Teacher Project is a group that actually approved like 20 to 30 teachers at the last school board meeting that I mentioned. But the New Teacher Project is a group that basically brings in uncertified teachers who have like a, you know, undergraduate degree to start doing education for like 2 or 3 years.
Teach for America.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing as Teach for America, just localized.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're setting up franchises.
Teach NOLA, New Teacher Project, all this horrible stuff. And
so where do the teachers come from for these things?
They come from school, from college. They have a different degree.
I remember Teach for America people used to be from out of town.
Yeah, well, most of the time that they are. And it's almost like this like missionary work that they're doing, you know? I'm going to come teach for like 3 years. And it's not all of them. I know some folks that have been Teach for America who became longtime teachers. But, I mean, for that's the exception, not the rule, right? The idea of the project is bring people in, replace, because there's because the way we treat teachers, based on all the stuff we were just talking about, there's a shortage of teachers, right?
Those teachers don't stay here, though.
No, they don't. They stay. They're in the school system for a couple of years, and then they go and manage their hedge funds or whatever.
They do their deployment, and then they're
doing their missionary work, and you know some of them will, stay. Some of them won't.
Sounds pretty miserable.
I don't know. I mean, again, it's one of those things that looks good on a resume, doesn't it?
Oh no.
Yeah, no, that's what it is.
Now I'm real mad.
Yeah.
Union busting is like a bullet point on your job application.
Well, that's the reason it exists, right? You're there whether you think you are or not, you're hired to be a scab because, like, again, one of the ways, like, most people burn out of teaching within 5 years or whatever. Part of it's because, and I mean, I see enough of these online, folks put on their, they write out their, like, why I left teaching, you know, essay, and it's because I wasn't respected, I wasn't heard, or a lot of older teachers do this, somebody who's been teaching for, like, 20 years, and they say, like, it basically testing and evaluation and all these things have taken over, and what I'm doing in the classroom is just not fun, and it's not geared towards children.
Yeah,
you know, there's no respect or professional, like, I don't want to lean too heavy on the professionalism thing because it's actually not something I'm super with, but
you're not teaching these kids how to live. You're teaching them how to pass tests so we can not get our school
right.
run by the government or whatever.
Right. Exactly. I've had kids this year who were, you know, not to disclose any information about the kids, obviously, but were put into foster situations or they would put into, You know, they were homeless at times. And it was just one of these situations where, like, how am I supposed to teach this kid how to do a test? I'm going to be evaluated on it and whatever. How is this? Why would this kid care about that?
This kid does not care about, like, standardized tests.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to learn how to read.
Yeah. And you know, or maybe not even that. Maybe they don't know where their next meal is going to come from, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a hierarchy of needs situation. Ah, man, I can go on about this forever.
Anyway, we got the New Hampshire coming up, huh?
Okay, so let's set the table for this.
Okay.
All right, so first off, you're listening to Good Morning Comrade. This is WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. You can find more information at goodmorningcomrade.com. So, in addition to finding out my school is closing on Wednesday, on Tuesday, the day prior to that, and I guess technically even still now, unless at some point during the time of recording and the time that we release this, which we're recording on Sunday, which we usually record on Mondays, recording on Sunday now. Bernie Sanders has still not been confirmed as the winner of Iowa. I mean, basically he has, but Tom Perez called for like a re-canvass of all the districts and all these other things. And it's taken several days to get the results from the Iowa caucuses, which is the first in the nation primary to choose the president that's going to go up against Donald Trump in 2020. Pete Buttigieg declared victory with 0%
Well, he wasn't even declared the winner. He just said
he was. He declared victory like on his own with 0% of precincts reporting, and then they had like the entire system just fell apart. The entire vote counting system, whatever.
People are saying Iowa's caucuses are done forever.
Yeah. Well, good. They're stupid, right?
Kind of. Yeah. They don't account for like people with kids that have to spend all day like doing this thing, or they don't account for people that can't get a ride, or like people with disabilities and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well,
they,
I mean,
they take place in the middle of the week.
On a Monday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, in addition to all that stuff, which sucks, right? In addition to all that, they couldn't even count it out. They couldn't even count, like, literally, when there's a caucus. People are standing in the corner or, like, one side of a, you know, auditorium or a cafeteria or some kind of, like, gymnasium or whatever, right? People are literally sitting or standing in a certain place. And you just, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, okay. And you write that number down. You can, and there was some kind of, like, app that the Iowa Democratic Party, like, use that was not for some reason like Microsoft Word or like
Excel.
Or like, yeah, it wasn't like an Excel spreadsheet, or it wasn't like a Google document or whatever. It was just something that some company called Shadow or developed.
Oh yeah, Shadow.
Which basically, why do you need an app for this? What's going on here?
I mean, apparently,
and it failed. Like, Google Forms would never have failed like that.
Well, yeah, it was a bad app. They just, like, got put together and, like, they just... Like,
somebody gave somebody's brother-in-law a contract to make that in the Democratic Party, and they also gave money to the Pete Buttigieg campaign.
No, Pete Buttigieg gave money to them.
Oh.
Like, they donated money to Shadow or whatever.
So he gave money to... Wait, Pete Buttigieg himself?
Oh, the campaign.
People did a campaign, gave money to this group something called like acronym. No, it was the other way around. There were Buttigieg supporters that developed it, and that was what happened. Even the group acronym, who was one of the,
I think Nevada said they won't use that.
Well, they might use a similar system though. I mean, if you're gonna, I don't know. That's getting into like weird speculation territory. But anyway, the reason that even happened is because like the way caucuses work is that you're in your, you know, little area and you count all these people, you need to start filling in fields. And for like I said before, like for some reason they couldn't just do that on a spreadsheet. What's the deal here?
You can't trust those spreadsheets, man.
Spreadsheets have failed, I don't know how many times in history.
Yeah, you can't trust the Roman numerals. because, you know, a lot of people don't know you do four, then cross one out, and that's five.
That's tally marks, man.
Wait, that's for, no, yeah, that's tally marks, you're right.
Yeah, that's the I and the I and the I and the IV. That's
no,
the,
no, I and I, yeah, yeah.
But, that's Roman numerals.
Yeah. Tally marks, yeah. I always thought those were kind of related, but I guess I was wrong.
They're both very old.
Yeah. I guess Abacus technology, really, you can't really download an Abacus app. Is there one?
I mean, I can check and see if I can get an Abacus on my phone.
Yeah, I can't download apps right now.
I don't know how to use Abacus, honestly. I don't know how to do it. It just seems like you would have...
the big Abacus joke maker? You don't know how to do one?
No, man. I make jokes about slide rules, not Abacuses. No,
you say Abacus.
No, slide rules. Slide rules are weird.
Maybe now, but historically you've been like, oh, I'll just get my Abacus.
That's not true.
Fake you Abacus geek. That is you.
Anyway, so now instead of
email your rudimentary counting machines to Good Morning Comrade.
Look, poker chips or get the hell out of here.
Whoa, should we count with poker chips?
Yeah,
like that's the Louisiana caucus because we have casinos.
Anyway, so you brought up New Hampshire. What about New Hampshire?
It's coming, and Bernie's ahead.
Bernie is ahead. He's been ahead like Mayor 7 points or something like that.
Mayor Pete's weird coup, like, kind of like got him a bunch of steam.
Well, and again,
like as it would if people thought you were the front runner. People were just like, vote blue, no matter who, huh? I guess I'm with Rat Boy,
that rat mother. I'm looking actually at the Real Clear Politics situation. Sanders has rocketed up since the, let's see here, February 3rd, which was the day of the caucuses, he was at his peak.
Yeah, we're looking at a line chart, and it looks like Pete has a big old...
Pete just like really rocketed up after the Iowa caucuses, and Biden just tanked.
Yeah.
Biden just fell into a well.
Well, they said he cannibalized all the Warren supporters, because Warren is basically gone.
He's still like 10 points ahead of Klobuchar.
Yeah.
And everybody else is like below that. But the thing about it is...
Wait, people are below Klobuchar?
Yeah, below Klobuchar. Klobuchar is fifth. You got Yang, Gabbard, Tom Steyer.
Oh, man.
And that's pretty much it. Deval Patrick is at a 0.4% if you're worried about him.
That was a big thing in Iowa because they were like, all these votes went to Deval Patrick, and they're like, no, I'm sorry, that was like an error.
Yeah, that's true. Like one of the problems when you would put a field in like for Sanders, he's got like, or for Buttigieg or for Warren or whoever, and it would go to somebody else.
Yeah, they're like, there aren't even any Deval Patrick people around here.
Yeah, nobody. Who is Deval Patrick? Nobody in Iowa even knows who that guy is.
Yeah, like unlike a Cory Booker or like a Julian Castro who were like devastated by not being allowed to the debates, Deval Patrick's like, it don't matter. I'm Deval Patrick, baby.
No, Bloomberg's like that too.
That just slides right off my back.
Even though Bloomberg got like allowed, like, and this is like part of the whole thing is that the entire, it seems to me that the entire like Democratic machine is just like doing everything. And maybe it's not true. Who knows? But it's doing everything it can to just like stop Bernie Sanders from becoming president.
That's what, like, Bloomberg is. He's not even trying to be a winner. He's trying to be a spoiler.
Right. He's very open about that.
He's trying to on purpose be a Ross Perot.
Well, hopefully it works out as effectively as it did for Ross Perot, because Ross Perot didn't do anything.
I mean, he tanked. Like,
he didn't tank George H.W. Bush.
He got a bunch of his votes. I think our dad definitely voted for Ross Perot.
I think people
who couldn't couldn't stomach to vote for Bill Clinton voted for Ross Perot.
Yeah, he was a Perot promoter, but I don't think he actually ended up voting for him because I think he confided in me that he voted for Clinton, but maybe we'll never know. Maybe I'm the only person that can tell the story because he's dead.
Yeah.
So I can write whatever I want. Unless mom knows or something.
I don't think you would have told her.
I'm pretty sure he told me that he voted for Clinton, or at least he was into, like, he, because, and that actually kind of makes sense for him.
I mean, he did love the sex.
Did he?
No. Made that up. Sorry. Any historians of my dad who want to, like, email me about him not enjoying the saxophone?
Either way, Michael Bloomberg is nationally polling at, like, 10% now. He paid off, like...
Yeah, man.
He paid up, like, $300,000 to the Democratic National Convention before he ran, and now he's just, like, qualifying for debates.
Somebody
despite the fact that he doesn't meet any of the qualification thresholds.
Somebody rightfully was like, you're an oligarch. And they were like, I can't believe you would say something like that. Like, how dare you? And everybody's like, no, they're right. You're so an oligarch. Yeah. Like, you're, like, trading in, like, money for, like, votes and, like, support.
You know what's funny, too?
Tom Steyer, too. Tom Steyer owns, like, polling companies. Like,
yeah, he's only... And if Tom Steyer was, like... If he was what he claims to be, which is an activist for the environment or whatever, if he was that, he could spend that money, the hundreds and, you know, tens of millions of dollars that he's spending on that, on developing, like, down ballot races for people who would be in Congress, or even supporting the best candidate for that would support climate. But he's not doing that, and it's not because people like, you know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, maybe to a lesser extent Warren, but like the reason that they, I mean, what they talk about the climate a ton. They talk about it all the time.
They didn't even have like a debate about climate. Like, it was one of the big issues in the world, but they never had a debate about it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, think of all the things they debated about, like all the stuff like they talked about in any of these. None of it was climate change. What else did they not talk about?
I mean, inequality, really. I mean, in general, I never talk about that.
Yeah, what are they?
Only Bernie, and again, Warren talks about it in the sense that the middle class isn't getting its fair share and the millions and billionaires are getting away with it. And then Bernie talks about more like an unjust society.
Yeah. So, when do you think people are going to start getting people in their, like, a vice VP picks?
No, I don't care. It doesn't really matter at this point. I mean,
that's the thing I'm always thinking about. Like, I'm like Julian Castro was like, I'm just going to be a Liz Warren guy.
Right. And he's not going to get anything for it because she's not going to win.
Plus, he went in too early. Like,
he just doesn't have any juice because nobody cares about him.
They tried to get the Castro bump, but like, that wasn't a thing. That wasn't a real thing.
The Castro bump.
Yeah. But like, it was like in Iowa, they had Yang people being like, well, if there's not a lot of Yang people, we'll vote for Bernie.
Yeah, well, Yang himself said that. Yeah. Yang himself said that if, he expects his supporters to go to Bernie Sanders, and I don't know if that happened or not in Iowa. It seems to have not happened.
But, like, all the people, like, kind of, like, finger, like, whatever, like, thinking about these things too much, they're, like, wondering, they're like, we're just going to split the vote. What are you talking about? Like, they've never seen an election before, you know?
What do you mean by that? Like, splitting a vote. Who's going to split the vote between who?
No, they're always like, oh, well, if you don't court the Yang people and you don't court the Warren people, like they've never seen an election where everybody's like, oh, yeah, this is the candidate. Like,
oh, so what the expectation that you're hearing is that, like the Sanders folks have to start courting...
Yeah, people are acting like they should.
They should do it now, as opposed to trying to win.
That's kind of one of the other big... like dumb criticisms people are doing. They're like,
well, yeah. I mean, like, again, like, if you go back a couple of weeks and you remember when they had all that stuff about like Bernie Sanders, like, saying that a woman can never be president or whatever, even if you think like I do that, like, that's a completely, like, underhanded attack, you can at least respect the fact that it's trying to win, you know, like, winning is important in this. like you don't just go in there saying, like, you can't go in with a vision of, like, a particular thing, like a particular, like, outlook on the world and a particular theory of change, which, I mean, I don't particularly think that Elizabeth Warren's theory of change is the same as mine.
Yeah.
To be the most, like, gentle I can be. And I don't particularly appreciate those kind of tactics, especially when it's against somebody that I'm sympathetic to, right? Like Sanders.
Yes.
However, I can respect the fact that she is trying to win. And that's actually kind of, you know, and it didn't work and it backfired and all that other stuff. At least it shows that you're trying.
It chuffs you a little bit.
No. It's not even like, it's just that, like, I don't know. There, when you're trying to get the W and trying to give the other guy the L, you got to go pretty hard. You know what I mean?
All right, man. I promise we did not watch Varsity Blues before this. Like, oh, man. This is weird. Like, I mean, I get what you're saying.
And I don't, like, again, none of the stuff that was happening there is anything that I am, like, happy about. And I think that it is a pretty cheap shot. But winning, if she would have won, or if she would have benefited from it, you know, through that, you know, private conversation, sharing all that stuff, if she would have benefited from it, then fine, you know? I mean, not fine, but I think
you'd be a lot more mad if she had pulled it off.
No, well, so I would definitely be very mad about it.
Yeah.
But my point is, you're playing to win. You play, like, again, it'd be like Herman Edwards, right? You play to win the game. Yeah. You don't play to just play the game. You play to win the game. Hello? You remember that?
Yeah.
It was great.
Oh, man. That's good. I mean, yeah, at least she's playing. At least she's, like, going for it. Like,
right.
She's not, like...
It's bad, and it's wrong, and it sucks, but, like, it's good that she... Like, it shows a little bit of fire.
Like, she's not running...
Bad judgment, but good fire.
She hits a little tumbler ground ball with shortstop. She's going to run it out, like... Like, she's not just gonna be like, oh, you got me.
Yeah. Like, or even, like, I don't know,
maybe they botched the
maybe
throw.
She wouldn't, like, hide brass knuckles in the trunks. Yeah. But she would sort of, like, if somebody hit their opponent with a chair, she wouldn't tell the referee. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, she'd she would,
like, she's not Eddie Guerrero. No. But she's also, like, not John Cena. I made this about wrestling.
She's not telling the ref that Gato hit the guy with the chair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she's not telling him no either.
Yeah.
WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3 is Good Morning Comrade. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I got New Hampshire, Bernie's up like 5 points.
Yeah.
He's likely to win. The thing that everybody's talking about, if you want to get into this primary stuff,
of course,
is that New Hampshire, he's probably going to win. Nevada, he's up. Like, he's up. Let's see here. Jeez. Okay, Biden's up in Nevada, actually, which is actually really big. He's up, like, 4 points on everybody. But I don't know when the last poll was.
So are we not watching the back end? Are we not watching the big Joe Biden? Like...
So Biden's up, according to a poll he was at. He was 1 point up on the 11th of January. They haven't polled since the 11th of January.
Is Biden green?
So Biden, yeah, he's actually dipped considerably. So is Sanders. And Tom Steyer, like went up, like, 3 points. But regardless, like, again...
Apparently Nevada is a Joe place.
No, Nevada is actually... So Bernie won Nevada in 2016, yeah. Or 2015, or 2016.
Looking at these numbers. We're doing the most, like, fun podcasting. We're looking at a line graph.
Yeah, no, but he... Like, my point here is that, according to the last... So, on the 8th, there was a Fox News poll that had Biden at 23% and Sanders at 17%. And then 2 days later, the 11th, there was one that had him, like, neck and neck. Right, 19% and 18%. So it's really close, and I know for a fact. I know the Clark County Educators of Education Union, the teachers union out there. They ended up going for the for Bernie, and the Culinary Union in Chicago. I mean, I'm sorry, in Las Vegas, which is a huge...
Yeah, I bet.
It's a big deal out there, right?
It's easy to dump on cooks.
They're not supporting anybody. Yeah. So they're just sort of, like, running it, like...
They're playing safe.
Playing it back. No, well, I mean, they could definitely break it either way if they wanted to, but they can sort of, like, I don't know.
Maybe they're saving it for later.
now's the time. But I mean, again, they've been very conspicuous about that. They're being like very like open about how like not partisan they are to this whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. So it's going to be neck and neck in there. And a lot of what happens in Nevada is dependent on what happens in New Hampshire. And Bernie's way up, so I think that would probably change things a lot. And then South Carolina comes, and when South Carolina rolls around, which is the sort of like where all of Biden's chips are in, because...
About South Carolina does sound like a Joe Biden place.
It's one of these places where apparently, like, there's a lot of... It's the way the press talks about it, at least, is there's a lot of like black voters there, which is not to say that there aren't, but also like the sort of like narrative is that like Biden is, that's his like big, his big chance to sort of like stop these early states, like even when he starts tumbling, they're gonna say like he's not falling apart because he's strong in South Carolina rather, and he's strong with black voters.
Oh no,
that's the idea.
I mean, the Sanders people have to be in South Carolina.
Yeah, yeah, they're in every place. They're all over South Carolina. And after South Carolina becomes Super Tuesday, which is where, like, you know, 20-something states all have their primaries. And that's sort of, by the time that happens, they should probably have a front runner emerging.
Okay. So how far off is that?
Super Tuesday is March 3rd?
There's, like, a lot of Tuesdays in a year, man. Like, 52.
This Tuesday is so super that it only comes once every 4 years, man.
Oh yeah, leap year.
Yeah, every leap year.
Whoa.
It's not the leap day, but it's very shortly after.
Is that why we have the extra day for this Super Tuesday?
Yeah. Well,
the extra day.
One day can contain all of this excitement.
The extra day is always a Tuesday.
No, that's not true.
No, true.
Super Tuesday's the 3rd, and then the. So after Super Tuesday, the day after Super Tuesday is actually the school board meeting where they're going to decide whether or not they're closing my school.
Jesus.
So that's a super week right there for me.
Maybe don't do anything the week before.
Maybe I should take that. Well, that's Mardi Gras week, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, that kind of works out perfect.
I mean, I have an extra day to rest after Mardi Gras.
I mean, you haven't been to parades in a while, though.
I go to at least one a year.
Okay.
To bring it all the way back around, I suppose. Beginning of the show. Good morning, comrade. WHIVLP New Orleans 102.3. So we got about 10 minutes left. And man, Sam is like rolled up next to you sleep, and it's pretty cute.
Yeah, Sam the cat, instead of attacking me, he's decided to like save up. Maybe he's waiting for me to go to sleep.
Keeping his cute, yeah. Yeah, he's resting. Guessing. He's resting up.
Sam the murder cat.
Yeah.
But
so,
also,
yeah.
Also, we locked him in here so he can't terrorize the other cat.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been fighting with the new Phoebe cat.
Fighting is different. Like, whenever he doesn't have food, he just, like, puts the other cat in a headlock until I feed him.
Well, all right. Not to get too into this on the show, but she instigates a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, all right. Let's not get into that.
Yeah. We can go into the behavior of our cats, which could be a completely different show.
Yeah, our spinoff.
Let's not do that right now.
Our cat behavior spinoff is not in the works, really.
Yeah, that's for the premium after hours, you know, yeah. Post game show.
$40 Patreon.
That's for the OnlyFans.
Oh no.
Anyway.
I mean, why would...
Make sure we cut that part out.
Why would people not a fan listen to our show?
So, I don't know. Go for it. What's next? The XFL started this weekend. Did you watch the first football game?
No. I was actually trying to come over here yesterday early, but I guess y'all were busy, y'all cleaning up and stuff. And because I wanted to watch the first XFL game over here, because Jeff is a big XFL fan.
I was an OG XFL head.
Who's your favorite team?
I like the Hitmen because they had the coolest name, and plus they had He Hate Me.
Yeah, the Hitmen from
New York / New Jersey.
Whoa. So they were not lying like the Jets do.
Yeah, I think they played in the Meadowlands, and they just basically said, and the Giants too, by the way. The Giants played in the Meadowlands too.
I don't know what that is.
That's basically a New Jersey stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Like right across.
Well, yeah, like New York.
East Rutherford, I think it's in.
You can't have a stadium in New York. It's too big.
Yeah, the gardens in New York.
Yeah, but that's not a football stadium. It's a basketball
either
stadium.
Way.
Also,
either
it's,
way.
Also, it's on top of a train station.
Okay, but either way. So the XFL. You were talking to me about the XFL to, before we get like too off the rails on this.
Well, I have a friend that I follow on the internet.
Twitter.com?
Yeah, Twitter.com. Oh, man. Look it up.
Hasn't anybody told you that site's bad?
Yeah, everyone. I know it's bad.
They're right.
But they were basically like, these people are out here without a union getting paid like $25,000 a year to get CTE because...
$25,000? Is it really that low?
I'm not sure, but it's like not great. They get paid like working people money.
He's saying that He Hate Me wasn't a billionaire?
He was not. Well, he did go to the NFL, so he might have got some money.
Yeah, he ended up with money at the end.
But
the average XFL player's salary is $55,000, which includes a base pay along with bonus for being active during each game per Pro Football Talk.
Do they? I mean, we know WWE as a company does not pay for travel. Do they pay for that?
I don't know, actually. That's something I got to find out.
But anyway, like, NFL players do not get paid enough. Being honest,
NFL players,
yeah, on it, like based on like how their schedules work, like if they don't work a whole, like if they don't work a bunch of seasons before they get out, like it doesn't add up to a whole lot. Plus, there's
you mean like contracts for like newer, like younger players or less experienced players, like the base level contract isn't enough money. The big contracts end up being a lot. But like people could go to like one day at training camp. They cannot even get, they can barely get signed or whatever. I think you have to get signed to participate in training camp, but the base salary can be sort of like waived away or something like that. Yeah. There's a lot of outs.
It's weird. Plus you have to pay a lot of people to like represent you and stuff. But, now basically because the XFL doesn't have a union, you get paid like $55,000 a year. And they can do even harder hits because they love harder hits. Like people were doing like helmet to helmets and stuff, but in the NFL they're like have concussion protocols because like it's been legislated. Like this has been like big stuff they talk about in Congress.
Right.
But the XFL is just like showing up and being like, nope, we don't have none of that. Like we don't have any accountability. These people just get brutalized.
Yeah. And people are gonna do it because they need the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is bizarre. Well, I think the XFL is probably bad. Because the people who run it are very bad.
I mean, the people that run the NFL, to be, not to say like a pox on both your houses or whatever, not to say it's equal or even or whatever, but like they're also ghouls. They just have a lot more money and a lot more operating costs, and they've sort of like carved out a huge like part of the culture for their, you know, mafia operation.
I mean, yeah, like people who run NFL like franchises are bad people, but
terrible.
At least, like
they're held accountable at least in some way.
They're kind of held accountable. Plus, like they're not big cartoon villains. When the other
Vince McMahon owns every team,
the other owner was like the owner of the XFL was a cartoon bad guy on TV for like 15 years,
literally.
Yeah,
in some senses. Like, I mean, he was
like.
I hate Austin.
It's almost like the NFL had like less accountability.
Yeah. Well, wait. The NFL has less accountability?
No. It's like XFL is like the NFL had less accountability.
Oh, yeah. That's true. And that's their branding too. Yeah. Not to get too nerdy about this, but the way that they present themselves is like, well, this is the dangerous football. This is when we don't have fair catches and stuff like that. Remember that?
This ain't your. This ain't your pawpaw's football. Mm-hmm. This is action football.
This is football where people are getting hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, they actually, like, really, at least the first time around, I haven't been paying as close attention, to be completely honest, the second time around, but the branding around the first time was that, like, no fair catches, no mercy, stuff like that. And they would have the coaches and, like, the commentators. Like, Jesse Ventura was one of the commentators, and he would, like, pick a fight with one of the coaches.
Jesus. That is some weird stuff.
Yeah.
Never a man to be governed.
No, but he was a governor, at least of himself.
He was a governor, not a governee.
Yeah. But, sovereign citizen. Oh, no. I don't think he was actually a sovereign citizen. And actually, I think he's a Bernie guy now, weirdly.
I think he lives on a compound, though.
Yeah, he has a compound, and he has it all, like, solar powered, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So he could be completely, like, cut off from the network, which I don't think is possible. Like, in 2019, I don't know if that's possible.
I mean, maybe he just types out all his stuff now.
Maybe. Or maybe he, like, writes it on a letter and has it in between, like, a go-between.
Maybe he's got, like, pneumatic tubes in his house and he just sends the mail.
That should be the real internet. Yeah. That should be real email.
I mean, how would I send my pneumatic tube?
How would I not read my emails if they were, like, right there in front of me, physically there?
Oh, dude.
How would I ignore it? Like, I would just have to put a big... I guess that's what I'd do with my real mail. I would just put it in a box and throw it away.
You recycle it.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a trash can, I suppose. That's the outbox.
Yeah. I don't know, but...
Yeah. Anyway, you can listen to Good Morning Comrade on every Tuesday. We try to put shows out on Thursdays as well most weeks. Last week, it was a little bit weird because I gave Scott the wrong show. Also, it was the week that I learned that my school was closing on Wednesday, so we didn't do a Thursday show for that reason. So whatever, you know, it was like totally dated. The one that we did do, me and Robert for Monday, was totally dated by the time that we put it out. So, sorry about that. We just look at it as a mental health week. Other than that, like, yeah, listen to us every Tuesday, most Thursdays on WHIV.com. Scott and I also had the 75th conversation about doing that Demolition Man episode, which has to be coming down the pike one of these days. Because we need to do a total working of Demolition Man from top to bottom, because that movie is requires a modern analysis, okay?
Yeah.
That movie actually does have a pretty good class analysis, I think, in a certain sense.
I think not, but we'll see.
Yeah. At least it understands that there are classes, right?
Well, yeah, everyone knows they've played Final Fantasy.
Jeez, I could not hate you more right now. Anyway, listen on Tuesdays every week, on Thursdays as well. GoodMorningComrade.com. You can get more information. And listen on WHIV FM. All right, love you, bye.